sit up a little.
As Peggy Carr lay ill in a hospital intensive care unit, doctors were baffled.
Take a deep breath for me now.
Lab tests were all negative, but one of the doctors noticed a tiny clue. Her hair was falling out. It was a symptom of a very rare condition, one the doctor had never seen before. And if he was right, there was no known cure. Peggy Carr was a 41-year-old restaurant worker who had been married to her second husband, Pye, for the last 6 months. Peggy worked as a waitress at a drive-in restaurant and had three children from a previous marriage. Pye had two children and worked at a phosphate mine.
They seemed to be happy. My mom loved him more than anything. You know, he was just the light of her life. You know, he was it.
But soon after their marriage, Peggy began to question the long hours Pye was working at the mine.
He worked all the time. There were some questions about if he was really at work or if he was out.
One night when Pye said he was working late, Peggy drove out to the mine. In the parking lot, she saw only two cars. One was Pye's. The other belonged to one of his former girlfriends.
My mom went out to where he worked. And we found him with another woman.
When, I guess, she found out that he was cheating, things started, you know, going downhill.
When Peggy learned of the affair, she took her children to a nearby motel and left her husband a note.
Dear Pye, I'm going to give you some time to think about us. I can't live like we have been. I can't imagine living without you, but I can if you don't want me. I love you with all my heart. Peggy.
After a brief separation, the couple resolved their differences, and Peggy and her children moved back home. On the day she returned, Pye left for a previously scheduled hunting trip. While he was away, Peggy became ill, complaining of an upset stomach and an intense burning sensation. When Pye returned home, he told the children he thought it was only a virus.
She was sick. She was very sick. She was laying in bed and she couldn't move. She kept complaining of her hands and her feet. She said she couldn't open her eyes. She was nauseated.
By the time Peggy was taken to the hospital, doctors noticed some weakness in both sides of her face. But when lab tests were negative and they couldn't diagnose her problem, Peggy was released.
The next day I went up to check on her and she was even worse. And I told Pye, I said, we need to take her to the hospital again because she's not getting any better. Well, he went to work.
The children drove her to the hospital once again. This time, one of the physicians who examined her noticed a tiny clue.
I noticed that her hair, simply raising her up off the pillow to listen to her back, quite a bit of her hair was left on the pillow.
Dr. Robert Van Hook and his colleagues thought it might be a poison, a very rare one, which doesn't show up in normal lab tests. A special test confirmed his suspicion. It was thallium poisoning. Thallium is a highly toxic metal, widely used as a pesticide before it was banned in the United States in 1972. Once inside the body, thallium attacks nerve endings and muscles, causing them to atrophy and die. In severe cases, it can cause delirium, paralysis, coma, even death. Tests revealed that Peggy had 50 times the maximum human exposure in her system, and there is no known cure or antidote. Within days, Peggy's stepson, Travis, and son, Dwayne, were hospitalized as well. They, too, had thallium poisoning.
Where it was like somebody taking 1,000 needles, putting your feet in them, and just pressing all at once. And real, real painful. Something that you just couldn't, you know, let go.
How did Peggy Carr and the two boys ingest such large amounts of thallium? Was it accidental, or was someone trying to kill them? Since there is no cure or antidote for thallium poisoning, Peggy Carr's condition grew progressively worse. After losing all of her hair, she slipped into a coma. Health officials frantically searched for the source of the thallium. The orange grove next to the Carr's home was tested to determine whether thallium had been sprayed on the orange trees. And the drinking water well in the area was also tested, but thallium wasn't found. Next, health officials gathered air and dust samples from inside the Carr's home and took more than 400 household items for laboratory analysis. Friends told police that the family received an anonymous threatening letter just a few months earlier. It was addressed to Pi Carr, misspelling Pi's name.
"You and all your so-called family have 2 weeks to move out of Florida forever, or else you all die. This is no joke."
Police were suspicious of Pi Carr, not only because he failed to mention the threatening letter, but also because of his extramarital affair, the fact that he was away when Peggy first got sick, and his hesitation in taking Peggy to the hospital.
We dug very deeply at that point into Pi Carr's background. Anything that would show motivation on his part to poison his wife.
We thought, you know, Pi had something to do with it, because the way he was acting so strange, you know. He was always so secretive. It's like he always had something to hide.
All of the remaining family members were asked to undergo thallium testing as well, just as a precaution. And the results were surprising. Peggy's daughter Sissy and her child Casey both had traces of thallium in their systems, and so did Pi. The only family member found not to have thallium in her system was Pi's daughter Tammy. When the laboratory analyzed the items from the Carr's home, they found the source of the thallium in some empty soda bottles. Detectives returned to the Carr home and found 3 full bottles from the same carton. The FBI found no fingerprints on the full bottles recovered from the Carr's home. But under a scanning electron microscope, magnified 100 times, the FBI discovered tiny scratch marks on the caps, an indication that they had been meticulously removed and replaced. Using a process called flame atomic absorption spectroscopy, the soda produced a distinctive greenish color to the flame, a positive indication that thallium was present. Tests revealed that each of the 3 bottles contained more than a gram of thallium, enough to kill an adult. Thallium causes drinks to overflow, alters the color, and produces a noticeable sediment on the bottom. But the mixture found in the soda avoided these problems and was a mixture which will not be revealed in this program. The FBI knew this was not the work of an amateur. The sophisticated knowledge of chemistry, the professional removal and reattachment of the bottle caps told the FBI that the killer was very smart, very organized, and would be very difficult to catch. When Peggy Carr slipped into a coma, her doctors had little, if any, hope for her recovery. Her son and stepson were both in serious condition, but expected to recover. Pi's daughter, Tammy, was the only family member without thallium in her system. She told police she didn't drink the soda because she consumed only diet drinks. And when thallium was found in Pi's system, he was no longer considered a suspect. With no other leads, the FBI was asked to provide a psychological profile of the poisoner. The profiling unit believed that the poisoner was highly intelligent, a white male in his mid-30s who resolves conflict without direct confrontation. He liked to read about murder, watch violent movies, and would then fantasize about committing murder.
It's more of a passive type of person, and it's more of a cowardly type of crime. You don't have to look the intended victim in the eye. It's very similar to a bomber, very similar type of personality.
The FBI suggested police question the neighbors because whoever poisoned the family knew their comings and goings and planted the soda without being seen. The Carr's only neighbor was Dr. Diana Carr, no relation to Peggy Carr, and her husband, George Trepel. Diana Carr had a master's degree in chemistry and graduated from medical school as an orthopedic surgeon. Her husband, George, was a freelance writer for a computer magazine. Both were highly intelligent and members of Mensa, an organization for individuals with IQs in the top 2% of the population. Police learned that Diana Carr had a fight with Peggy just a week before she was poisoned.
She was cussing, ranting and raving about my two brothers having music on in the front yard, telling them to turn it down.
My mom had enough of this lady, you know, yelling at her, screaming at her, cussing at her, so she turned around, walked off, said, "I'm done talking with you."
She says, "This ain't over yet. This ain't over yet."
A background check revealed that Trepel had been arrested in North Carolina in the mid-70s for running one of the largest methamphetamine labs in the eastern United States. The drug agent who arrested Trepel called him the smartest chemist he had ever known. On March 3rd, 1989, 4 months after she was poisoned, Peggy Carr died. It was now a murder investigation. The sheriff's department assigned Special Agent Susan Gorick to the case. She was asked to go undercover to infiltrate the Mensa group to which George Trepel and Diana Carr belonged, an experience she vividly described in her best-selling book, Poison Mind. Under an assumed name and identity, Susan Gorick attended a Mensa murder mystery weekend, which George and his wife Diana were hosting.
Before I went to the weekend, I spoke with the people up at the FBI Behavioral Science Unit to see if I could get some tips on the type of person or type of personality that I should develop if I was to meet George Trepel.
When Gorick arrived for the weekend, she received a copy of the murder scenarios George Trepel wrote for the participants. One was a murder by poisoning.
Few voodooists believe that they can be killed by psychic means, but no one doubts that he can be poisoned.
Susan Gorick accomplished her mission that weekend when George Trepel befriended her.
He's very intelligent, maybe a little eccentric. A lot of people would call him odd, but because I spent so much time with him, I got to know him, and I did see a good side of him. I did see a nice personality, but I also saw a very evil side.
Oh yeah, somebody got poisoned next door.
In her undercover role, always under surveillance, Gorick met with Trepel on numerous occasions, hoping to gather evidence of his involvement in the poisonings. Their relationship led to an important break. A year after Peggy Carr's death, George and his wife Diana moved. They rented their old home to George's new friend, Susan Gorick. She moved in before all of the couple's belongings had been removed. And when she did, homicide detectives moved in with her. They searched the house and the shed Tree Pal used as a workshop.
We sent everything from the workshop garage to the FBI laboratory for them to examine.
Inside one of the bottles, the FBI discovered thallium, similar to the type found in the soda bottles in the Carr home.
We had a lot of circumstantial evidence, but this was the only piece of real evidence that you could actually put your hands on.
The police then searched Tree Pal's new home and discovered a notebook George captioned, General Poisoning Guides. Inside were excerpts from books used by homicide detectives. One was Death by Poison. Another listed details of the uses and effects of thallium. George Tree Pal was arrested for the murder of Peggy Carr and the attempted murder of the entire Carr family.
Police believe that George Tree Pal grew annoyed with his neighbors, especially the children. When the threatening letter failed to scare the family away, Tree Pal took a more direct approach. He purchased some soda and carefully removed all of the bottle cases. His chemical knowledge led him to choose a poison which had no cure or antidote, one that couldn't be detected by conventional medical tests. It was hauntingly similar to the plot he would later write for the murder mystery weekend. Most likely ingested more soda than the others because she had the highest thallium levels. After she was hospitalized, her condition deteriorated. She slipped into a coma and died 4 months later. The two boys were also hospitalized, but recovered.
I would say that this whole case of CC. This case was about being able to find the thallium in the washings of the empty bottles. When Coca-Cola did the experiments, that was extremely compelling. The science at the FBI lab, if you pick up those bottle caps, you can't possibly, I don't think, with a magnifying glass, to find those two ones. And yet, they're so obvious, well, that pictures of the FBI did. Another thing very important about the science was George's knowledge of the science and the amount of literature found in his house that backed it up.
When Tree Pal went on trial in 1991, the case against him was largely circumstantial. Tree Pal's criminal history as head chemist for an illegal methamphetamine lab. The fact that he used similar phraseology in an interview with the police that was used in the threatening letter. His authorship of the murder mystery storyline dealing with both a poisoning and a threatening letter. The bottle with thallium found in his workshed, and the books with information on the use of thallium found in his home.
The whole case is circumstantial. I mean, that was my whole closing argument. And the way that we approached it because of that was to exclude every other person on the face of the earth.
The defense argued there was no proof that Tree Pal purchased the soda. His fingerprints were not found on the soda bottles or on the vial of thallium. His lawyer also suggested that there was reasonable doubt. All of the evidence could also point to Tree Pal's wife, Diana, who had a master's degree in chemistry. It took the jury just 6 hours to reach a verdict. George Tree Pal was found guilty of all charges, and he was sentenced to death.
I don't believe it. And I honestly didn't believe it because the man that I knew, you know, was the man I mowed his driveway because it was 2 foot off of our property line. I mowed his driveway. He always waved at me. He was weird. He was a nerd. You know, I heard he was a chemical freak or whatever. But he was, he did some chemical work, you know, not in my eyes.
He did the most horrible act that I've ever seen. I'm saying that this is good. And he said, he killed one person, but there were three towards them.
She was really, truly my best friend. She was my head of honor at my wedding. She was the only one I had for a long time. My dad wasn't always there. And she always, she always was.